This little piggy went to market. This little piggy stayed home. And this little piggy drew Forge FC in CONCACAF League. Campiel.ca Virtual Newsroom. Marty and Charlie from Campiel.ca. Did you like that, Charlie?
Yes. Yeah, I liked it.
If you don't know what we're talking about, we're talking about Municipal Limeño. Limeño, right? Of El Salvador.
Yeah.
Drew them in CONCACAF League. That draw, or that game rather, will be next month. Again, Forge kicking off their CONCACAF League play against a team with a freaking pig in their crest. Charlie, you posted this.
And not just a pig, like a hilarious cartoon pig.
You posted this, like, it's kicking. How would you describe what it looks like to the listeners at home?
It genuinely looks like a scene out of Peppa Pig, like the children's cartoon. It's awesome, man.
Yeah. Shout out to Tom at Forge. I've never met him, but he had actually reached out to the club specifically as a staff member, literally as like a representative of the club, saying like, hey, we want merchandise. Can you get us kits?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they reached out and they said that we can, or something, or that kits are on the way or will be able to be bought by Canadians very soon, which is great news.
Yeah, I certainly want one. And if nothing else, I think we'll have to get in contact with some players for just to organize a shirt swap after that game so we can get some coming back to Canada.
Yeah, Kyle Becker, we're looking at you. Okay, let's talk about the draw itself. This maybe seems like a favorable draw to Forge. As Coach Bobby Smyrniotis said this week, he said it last year in their last CONCACAF League run, it's very hard to do scouting. It's very hard to know what the opponents are doing or thinking. But is that kind of your impression, Charlie? Is this was maybe a better draw than with some of the other teams that we saw?
Yeah. I think it's definitely a better draw for Forge than it was last year. We really don't know much about Limeño or even the Salvadoran League in general, but they do seem at least maybe on par with Antigua that we saw Forge beat last year. And then the rest of the draw looks a lot better than last year. They don't have to play Olympia in the second round. And it looks like some of the big clubs like Olympia and Alianza and Herediano are all on the opposite side of the bracket, so Forge wouldn't have to worry about them until, knock on wood, they were to get to a final in this competition. They do have Saprissa on their side of the bracket, but other than that, I think most of the heavy hitters are likely to be avoided. So that's good. But obviously Forge is never going to look past the first round, which is going to be a tougher game. I mean, Limeño is technically the higher seed, partially just because Canada's coefficient in this competition isn't very good because we just got into it.
It's virtually non-existent, right? Canada 2, that slot, has only played two games or four games, technically two times.
It actually got a little better just by virtue of Forge winning a round last year, but they still not good enough to get them the higher seed in the first round. But Limeño is going to have had like two league games in October prior to this game, because that's when they kick off. So that'll be interesting. It'll also be interesting to see where this game is played. Bobby kind of told me that they're still not sure because obviously in the CONCACAF League, you have to have lights in your stadium, and it sounds like they don't. So they're maybe looking at some other kind of venues to play the game in. So there's obviously a lot to figure out in the next just slightly under a month before this game is played. But I do think Forge kind of look at this competition. They really like their chances at the moment.
Yeah, they did something similar, I believe, with Antigua last year. They had to move the game from their home stadium to a larger city in Guatemala to have that, because, it had the lights. Forge, as you already sort of touched on, seems like every other club will be playing games at this point, you know, knock on wood. But Forge, like Bobby said, they've got 3.5 weeks to prepare for this. And, I mean, make sure everyone's healthy. And which is great after something like the Island Games, where, you know, we had players like Elimane Cisse hurt, Anthony Novak as well, Chris Nanko, a player we don't know when he'll be back exactly. But I mean, it's an interesting draw for Forge. Do you think that this is going to be a bit of a disadvantage to have this much time off, or I don't know. It's just such a toss up, right?
Yeah. See, I don't think it's going to end up being that much of a disadvantage for them, because it's not like they're going to be off for like months. It'll be about 5 weeks in total, maybe 4 or 5 weeks before. Because I think not even, I think it'll be about a month. I think the game is scheduled for October 20th, I want to say, which is just a month and a day after the CPL final, which means that they'll be healthy and they'll probably be reasonably fit heading into this, and they'll have enough time to kind of scout this opposition and figure out like how they want to play against them. It sounds like the only Forge player that's likely to be unavailable is Clyde Chella, whose ACL is injured, and that's obviously a long-term thing. But everybody else should be fit and healthy and ready to go. And unlike last year, this is their only competition to focus on, right? Like, they don't have to kind of go down to Guatemala and then come back up and play Cavalry at home and then fly back down to Central America and then come back and play on Vancouver Island, despite half the team having like food poisoning. So I think they'll have a little bit of the luxury of kind of focusing on this competition, which is kind of a huge priority for them.
And they're taking on Toro FC of Panama in the round of 16. Relatively big club for this level, but keep in mind, I think it's the top six teams that will advance and qualify for the Champions League next year. So, you know, if that brings you to the round of 16, now you're in that pool of eight. You know, you could end up losing a quarterfinal if you win these next two ties, and then still qualify. So very much in reach, just as it was last year. I mean, you think about that 1-0 win over Olympia at Tim Hortons Field. Low key, one of the greater moments of the CPL's history, and Forge's as well. That's a result that I think, looking back, it's going to be hard to get that result. But keep in mind, Forge not the best record in their games in Central America. A 0-0 draw against Antigua, and then that 4-1 loss to Olympia. So something to watch for, especially since they're single ties. I think that's going to play a big factor, right?
Yeah, that's going to be really tough. I think anybody who's been watching Canadian soccer teams, whether they're national or club teams, for any amount of time will tell you that it's extremely difficult to go down to Central America and win there, right? Like, no matter what level you are, no matter who you are, it's always going to be difficult. And I think Forge knows that, right? So hopefully they can pull it off. The you mentioned Taro, the Panamanian team in the second round. They're not as good a team as Olympia, who Forge played pretty well last year. Like, they are beatable. Their most recent appearance in the CONCACAF Champions League was 2018. They beat FC Dallas, and then I think got like just dismantled by Club America in the second round. They lost to TFC twice, so if it's a in 2011, so it's a if it's a familiar name, that might be why. But yeah, the draw's okay. I think Forge kind of like their chances here.
Toro FC versus FC Dallas. Two like bull crests and logos. Yeah. That's strange.
That's the only reason I could remember that.
only crests. We only talk about logos here on the CampYell.ca virtual newsroom, apparently. Let's switch gears here to our post-mortem series on CampYell.ca. We're calling up coaches or GMs or CEOs of each CPL team and doing a bit of a breakdown of the Island games in the 2020 CPL season. Let's start with FC Edmonton, because that was the first team we talked to. Charlie, you spoke to Jeff Paulus, I guess now departed head coach, to sort of break down the Island games. Had an interesting call with him. You were telling me that he broke down almost every single game, all seven, what went wrong, what went right. What was your summary from that call and in that story? And what are the main talking points from FC Edmonton coming out of the Island games?
Yeah, it felt like there was kind of a lot to talk about. And obviously Jeff, like, kind of every time he said something would preface it by being, "I'm not trying to make excuses. I take it all on myself." And I'm like, yeah, you already took it all on yourself because you stepped down. Like, I don't think anybody's worried about you making excuses.
Fair enough.
But like, he's really insisting that they actually probably deserved at least a little better. And I think I'd tend to agree. Like, they looked pretty good in their first game against Forge. They kind of had a few chances. I think they hit a post and a crossbar in that game. and so on.
And that Kareem Moses' own goal, I believe, that was unlucky as well.
They lost on the own goal, and then Kwame Awoa just with kind of a magical screamer from outside the box, which what can you do? Like, even Jeff Pollock was like, I just shrugged. I was like, that's incredible. But yeah, I think he kind of boiled it down to, like, they obviously weren't good enough in the final third, or at least they didn't get into the final third enough. So whether it was kind of connections in transition, or maybe just not moving the ball fast enough at times was part of it. He was really, really, really disappointed with the way that they kind of handled set pieces at both ends. Like, I think they were scored on maybe four or five times from set pieces, plus another three from kind of open play crosses. And I don't think they scored on any, which is kind of a big part of what Edmonton wants to do, because just they have so many big guys. Like, if you have Easton Ongaro in the box, right, you want to be able to score on some set pieces. And I mean, obviously, losing Amir Didich in the first game kind of kills you in that respect, especially defending them, because he's one of the best players in the CPL in terms of aerial duels, right? Mm-hmm. But it sounds like that was kind of one of the main problems. And I don't know. I mean, they are still a young team, so I think maybe there was some elements of experience that a team like Forge or Cavalry might have had the edge on them. But it's not all bad, I think, for Edmonton, mm-hmm. even though they only have 1 point. Like, they have players there to work with, and I think there's a decent foundation, and that's kind of what Jeff felt as well.
Well, that was that one quote where he says, you know, whoever the next coach is, they're going to inherit Prince Amanda, Marcus Velado Sagai, you know, Chance Carter, Anthony Caceres had a good tournament as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to inherit a good team, or, you know, regardless, in a good group of young players. I just wonder, I think you needed to have Kevin Ailman have like the seven games of his life in order for them to qualify, because he was the kind of player where, mm-hmm. well, it's true, because, you know, if you look at a guy like Marco Bustos, who really showed up for Pacific FC, and as we know, teams didn't have a lot of time to truly prepare for this with 11 aside, training and preparation and whatnot. Like, you really needed a player like that just to have an insane tournament, and, you know, chips didn't fall that way, unfortunately.
I think we've said it enough about Edmonton. Like, we don't know if it would have been different in a longer season, but mm-hmm. they didn't have a longer season, and this is the way it kind of ended up. So
yeah, no, it didn't work. Pacific FC, spoke to Pamadou Ka the other day. They're all on the West Coast, save for one player, which I think is really interesting. Alejandro Diaz has decided to stay on Vancouver Island and move with his girlfriend. So it's only Thomas Miller-Jaguerre, mm-hmm. who's visiting family in Montreal, and obviously he's going to come back out west. So they've got an interesting story, fully planning on having a camp, looking at friendlies right now. Apparently CEO Rob Friend is digging into that. Be really interested to see how some of these teams end up continuing to play into October and November, and this is definitely a team that is going to do that. But I think the big quote out of Pamadou Ka is, I asked him pretty straight up, because he faced a question in the Island Games about the future of Marco Bustos in the CPL. I just said, you know, have you had any offers? Do you expect them? And he said, I haven't heard anything yet, but he said he genuinely expects there to be interest in Pacific FC players, which is very interesting, Charlie, considering a lot of the players came from the Vancouver Whitecaps, and they're not having a great time in MLS right now.
No, they are not.
But like,
I think they'd be legitimately better right now with Caden Cheung and Marco Bustos in their lineup.
Well, maybe that's the question. Like, who would be your like top three or four potential targets on Pacific FC? Like, say someone from MLS calls you tomorrow and say, who should we be looking at?
Yeah, it's probably Cheung and Bustos, and then I think Matthew Baldissimo as well.
I agree totally. Yeah. Very tidy on the ball.
He's already got his brother in Vancouver.
Yeah, that's true.
He had a really, really, really good tournament, I think. Maybe we didn't talk about that enough, but he was really composed in the center of midfield. He kind of got a lot done for them. He looked really good, and probably more mature than his age suggests.
Yeah, and then, I mean, there are tons of other players that you could expect, but honestly, Miller-Jaguerre should be considered.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be interested to see. I mean, Callum Irving still earned a goalkeeper of the year nomination. Not exactly the longest term on Island Games, but, you know, it was maybe over half of the games or something like that. But anyways, interested to see if there's any moves out of Pacific FC. Also interested to see if there's any moves out of Valor. Rob Gale spoke to Ed Tate out of Winnipeg. Interesting to hear that Stefan Sabara, Andrew Jean-Baptiste, Massa Casher, they've all got at least inquiries on those players already, because they had really good tournaments and it showed, which is great. And Gale seems to think he can get, you know, the loanees back. Some of them, like James Pantemis and Julian Dunn, obviously would be great. Expecting 2/3 of his current group to come back, which maybe is a lofty goal, but considering some of the players were loanees or whatever. But what did you take out of that discussion, and where do you see sort of Valor going from here?
Yeah, it's really tough to say, like, with Valor, because again, like, we don't know how many of these guys are going to stick around, because, like, obviously Rob Gale put a lot of work into kind of rebuilding this team in the past offseason, and you don't want to start from square one again, right? They kind of have this mix of these old veteran guys. Like, they have obviously Daryl Fordyce and Fraser Aird and all these kind of guys that have played a lot of soccer and probably are pretty happy to just hang out in Winnipeg and play soccer at Valor. And then you have these young guys, like the guys that kind of had a really good tournament, even like a Brett Levi's isn't, he's, I want to say 23 or 24.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they have a lot of guys in that sort of range who looked pretty good at the Island Games and probably have the ability to go further. But I think in some cases, including maybe a Sabara or a Master Casher, you might consider just waiting a little bit longer if you're them, just because I think that you don't want to make the jump too early, right? And I think that they had good tournaments, but maybe could, like, I think that there's probably more for them to grow at this level, because it's not like they really dominated very often. So I think that if you're them, at least, obviously it's very tempting to jump up to whatever higher level kind of comes calling for you. But I do think that they have a lot more to gain from playing in the CPL.
Hey, like, we heard rumors about Andrew Jean-Baptiste linked back to MLS, like, 4 games into the tournament or less, probably less, which it just goes to show. I mean,
he probably could.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And full credit to him, had an amazing tournament. A good shout for the best 11 Campiel.ca's tally or collection last week. Let's switch to York 9. We'll do 4 clubs this week and then 4 clubs next week. So I spoke to Angus McNabb, the managing consultant there. Seems like changes are coming. Pretty clearly, they weren't that good in front of goal. He explained to me he had the worst expected goals. I'm going to butcher this. Worst expected goals per shot from any team across both seasons in the CPL. It was like 0.05, something like that. Attributed a lot of that to the personnel issues that they had with COVID-19. They wanted to bring in certain players with certain attacking profile, and they just didn't get them. You know, they were able to bring in players like Lowell Wright and Alvaro Vero as well at the last minute, which, you know, people tend to forget about. But it really seems like changes will be coming, and we have to assume that they're going to be, you know, attack-minded changes to try to generate a little bit more attacking prowess in 2021. But maybe the question is, like, the core of this team, because York 9 really does have a core. If you think about, you know, Nate Ingham, Luca Gasparato, Manny Aparicio, Ryan Telfer, Kyle Porter, like, these are players that have been starters for this team for 2 seasons. They're going to go into, like, a third year with this club. You know, you're starting to get into the familiarity. Mm-hmm. So, like, where do you think that most of this core stays?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, there's definitely players that I think that you expected a lot more of at the Island Games. I mean, obviously Ryan Telfer is one of them. He had, I think by anybody's standards, an extremely disappointing tournament, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's probably not going anywhere. I mean, he was kind of the big splash of the offseason to get him back from Cyprus. I mean, maybe Kyle Porter isn't necessarily getting the job done, but I think of all the guys we're mentioning, like I think pretty much all of them performed pretty well. But again, none of them are strikers, right? And that's kind of the problem.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because that could go any way, right? I could totally see York 9 wanting to shake everything up, or just, you know, add a striker or two. Should note as well that York 9 and Forge currently looking at doing some friendlies, which is super interesting, playing off the geographical advantage, I suppose, of being and being a close. As Pacific's looking for friendlies, that could be against whoever, but that'll be interesting to see if there's two CPL teams playing games behind closed doors this fall. Couple informal 905 derbies. See if we can get those streamed or something.
Yeah, I hope they're not entirely behind closed doors.
Yeah, that'd be great to be able to go. Okay, let's finish with the Gold Cup draw. That's happening next week. Best and worst case scenario for Canada at this point, we've got I think Pot A, Pot B, and Pot C decided. What is like the best case? Probably, is it Costa Rica and then like Grenada or something?
Yeah, I mean, I think Honduras, as much as we have kind of demons there, might be an easier team to beat than Costa Rica at the moment.
Charlie, I picked Costa Rica for a reason. even though they're like quarterfinalists of the World Cup, I'm like, I'm not picking Honduras. Really easy.
You want no part of Honduras. You want no part of Honduras.
Well, I'm picking, if you're picking an easy group for Canada, you don't pick Honduras as the top seed.
Yeah, you're probably right. Although, like, is anybody that's going to start for Canada against Honduras going to, like, have played in a game that Canada lost to Honduras in the past? Like, anybody?
I think Junior Hoylett was with the
maybe
team
Junior
in the last cycle when they lost. But, yeah, you're right. And you're right.
Like, you like to think that this is kind of a new generation for Canada. And, I mean, if you can't beat Honduras, then what are we even doing here? Right?
I forgot. Sammy Piette would have played against Honduras in one of those games.
Yeah, probably. But I agree. They're like, we want no part of Honduras because just there's too much kind of too much bad voodoo there. But like, they're very beatable. And then maybe we should move on to the third pot. Like, I think obviously the team that you don't want to see come out of that is Curaçao, right? Like, otherwise,
yeah,
it's Martinique or Suriname or Grenada. Yeah, you just don't want to play Curaçao.
Yeah,
even then, like, they're beatable.
Yeah, it's interesting because they've got do they have Gus Hiddink? Is that correct?
Is their
coach? They have
that's awesome.
I just want to I get some of these. Yeah, they do have Gus Hiddink. That's right. So he replaced he's here for the 2022 cycle, which is crazy. But Curaçao is low key quite good, and Canada has done pretty well against them. But I think that they've sort of remade their program and have a lot of hype around them. And then obviously Mexico would not be great for Pot A, yeah.
No,
hopefully not for that. And then Qatar as well. They're in pot. They're in the fourth pot.
Yeah.
And then we should note that the three winners from Gold Cup qualifying, which was something that was announced last fall, I think, that's still yet to be played. So there'll be, you know, a few, minnows essentially in that group.
Yeah. I think just looking at it again, I think Qatar is automatically drawn into Group D. So if Canada were to get them, that would also mean that they get Honduras for sure, which is interesting.
All right. Well, that would be okay. That would probably not be great. I don't want to play the Qatar Brazilians if I'm Canada. Too many Brazilians on the Qatar.
Yeah, team. I don't think I want to play Qatar either.
And also, I should note, interesting that Martinique is a third pot team. I wanted to look up how that happened, but or are
I
they?
I mean, Canada played them in the last Gold Cup, didn't they? That was the team that they beat 4-0.
Yeah, and did pretty well. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, well, we'll be back next week to hopefully break down that Canada somehow has Mexico, Honduras, and Qatar in their group. They changed the rules at the last minute just for to work in Canada's favor. Okay, we'll see you next week.